What's up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the Fast Friday Podcast on Sikkim365.com. I'm Craig Smoke, Sikkim365.com team reporter, also host of UNR weekdays 12 to 3 on ESPN Central Texas. Back from the Super Bowl and glad to be back and glad to be joined, as always, by Grayson Grundhafer, Sikkim365.com team reporter, director of broadcasting as well. And we come to you after the second signing day. The 2019 class is officially wrapped up, and Baylor with a bunch of new additions. And we talked about the first phase of this class back when they signed in December, but now five new players to talk about and a couple of big recruiting wins for the Bears as well. So that is one thing we will dip into. Also, some staff changes announced that we will talk about. Getting names added on to their titles or getting new titles or changing positions. We'll get into that as well. But Grayson, how are we doing this week, man?
I'm doing good. It's nice to have you back. I actually got asked a question last week about my real thoughts about Craig. And so, I gave a really harsh answer. So I hope you didn't listen to it last week.
No, I'm just waiting for my solo podcast to answer the question in the reverse.
Yeah, no, it was a good week, though. It's good to have you back, and you got home safe from the Super Bowl, so I know you had a lot of fun while the rest of us were hanging out and just looking at Baylor stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, I still kept track of what was going on, obviously, with signing day right around the corner, and so when I got back to Texas last Saturday, was able to kind of get back into the swing of things, and, you know, I've had a pretty good week. Was able to talk to Yusuf Terry on the show on Wednesday. We've also, between between the two shows that we have now locally, Joey McGuire, I had Evan Cooper on Thursday, so it's been good. I think Frisman Jackson is going to be on tomorrow, which will be Friday, so everybody listening to this on a Friday, Frisman Jackson will probably be up maybe by the time that you're listening to this. So yeah, definitely check out the podcast section of ListenCentralTexasSports.com. And I'm sure there'll be some crossover as well with Sikkim365 on the message boards as we do post interviews there. But, yeah, I've got to talk to, like, three different assistants and a couple of different players, and it's been good. And of course, when we were talking to them, we were talking about signing day and this next chapter of, you know, the yearly schedule. You get your signing day number one, your signing day number two, and then it's into spring ball. And then there's that little bit of a break, really the only break that really occurs between about May and then early July, and then once Big 12 Media Days starts up in July, mid-July, that's when the ball gets rolling again. So we're right in the thick of it, and things are still fast and furious. So let's talk about this recruiting class to start things off with. I mean, we know of all the guys, and we've already discussed all the guys that signed the first time around, but as I mentioned, five new signees for Baylor. And I don't think you really could have asked for much more with the five that they got, starting off with Garmon Randolph, the big defensive end out of Jefferson, Georgia, had all obviously interest from LSU as well, and some other really nice offers. But when I talked to Evan Cooper, I asked him, I said, you were very key in the recruitment of two guys in particular. Now, he is key in a lot of the recruitments, but the two sort of somewhat unknown and maybe the two guys with the most upside just from a physicality and athletic standpoint, in Isaiah Howard, who they got seemingly out of nowhere, and that was Evan who had the video of him dunking the basketball, and they just love his size and his athleticism. And then Garmon Randolph was the other one. Wasn't so much on the radar until later on. I feel like that was really when a lot of the attention was occurring. But they're able to beat out LSU and beat out some other schools. Like I said, nice offer list for him and a big body. And if he and Howard can develop into the types of players that they believe they can turn them into with their size already, much less what they'll do once they get on campus, these are the guys they're looking for. These are the super freaks that they are looking for. So Garmon Randolph, let's start off with him.
Yeah, so I actually posted an article today about a kind of a player comparison for Garmon Randolph. And the name that came to mind for me was a guy that played at Oregon a few years ago, DeForest Buckner. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember that name at all, but he was Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year his senior year. But he was a guy that came in 6'7", 230 pounds, much like Garmon. Similar frame, everything like that. Similar, like, you know, testing scores as far as 40 time and things like that. And you know, I think Garmon can turn into a guy like that. if he's able to put on, you know, maybe he doesn't get all the way to 291, which is what Buckner got all the way up to, but if he can get up to that 270 range by the time he's a junior, he could be an absolute force. And I mean, with the way this staff is trending to where they're trying to do a 3-4 defense more, I think he's a perfect fit for that. Once he puts on the weight, this year I probably see him more as a rush end just because they need bodies at that position. And I don't think he's going to be physically developed enough to be a full-time starter at defensive end this season. But I see a lot of potential with him, and he had an amazing offer list. Pretty much everyone wanted him at tight end, though. And so Baylor really saw the potential in him to turn into a big-time player and a guy that can kind of make up for the loss of B.J. Thompson down the road. And I think that's one of the biggest things with him, and what makes him such an important get for this class was the fact that they lost B.J. Thompson. They needed someone to come in and fill his role to an extent this year, but even more so next year and the year after. So, you know, big time get for the Bears. He had offers from Auburn, Bama, Florida, Florida State, Michigan, Penn State. I mean, he had some huge offers. So for Baylor to go in and compete late and steal him away from LSU to an extent was huge. And they made him a priority. And he mentioned the fact that he could play early was huge in his decision to go to Baylor over LSU.
Yeah, he's a triple jump guy from what Matt Rhule was saying. So obviously pretty athletic for a 6'7" young man, and a guy that they're hoping will provide a nice pass rush off that edge, as you mentioned. He did, however, Matt Rhule in his signing day press conference, leave open the possibility that he could, you know, see some time at tight end. But the focus will be on him as a defensive end for the time being. So that was a really big get. Adds a lot of bulk to that defensive line immediately, although he's still got plenty of body developing still left to do, which will be Jeremy Scott and company's job. But, you know, that was one that kind of, quite frankly, seemed like a bit of a pipe dream when I first started seeing his name mentioned. Like, really, are they going to go dip into Georgia? And I know they got Isaiah Howard as well, but he was far more under the radar than Garmin is. And so that's a really nice get, man. That's a really nice out-of-state get. And there's, you know, some out-of-state guys to talk about in these five. So Garmin, Randolph on board. Then there was a young man who at one point looked like he was not going to be able to be a part of this class. At one point looked like he might not even be playing D1 college football. He might have to head to the JUCO route potentially. But you talk about more size except for on the opposite side of the line, and that is the big man out of Paris, Elijah Ellis, 6'6", long arms. He'll have to put on some weight as well, but that's the case for pretty much, you know, everybody other than, you know, elite skill guys kind of around the country that are just already where they're needed to be. But for the linemen, it's always want to pack on more weight. But again, here's the size, 6'6", that they're long arms, that they're looking forward to develop. And good on Elijah. Matt Rhule even mentioned in his press conference, hey, he had some great issues to take care of. He seemingly cleared up that mystery. And to his credit, he was able to get those grade issues taken care of, and now he's going to be at Baylor.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention one more thing really quick about Garmin. How much trust do you have to have in a staff when they're the only ones that offer you on the defensive line?
Yeah.
I just found that pretty crazy about him. But, yeah, Elijah Ellis, wow. I mean, this is a guy that we flat out really didn't know much about. The whole recruitment cycle, it was hard to ever really get much information from or about him, really. And so very interesting recruitment, but he did come to a Baylor camp. And Coach Rhule mentioned when he saw him at the Baylor camp, he basically fell in love with what he could do. He thought that he was so impressive and one of the standouts from the camps. And so to hear that, that's big. I mean, because he saw it with his own eyes. He saw the potential. He saw the ability from Elijah. And he's a guy that I don't think will get immediate playing time. I think it's going to take him a while to figure it out at this level. But he's got the size. He's got the length. He's got the, you know, wingspan, as people want to point out. And he's going to have the weight. I mean, you can just see it with his frame. He's going to be plenty big enough. I think he's definitely a project, but he's a guy that has a very high ceiling. And this staff loves that. They love guys like that. And I think now that they've built some solid depth on the offensive line, they're able to take a risk here and take a guy that could turn into he could flat out turn into a pro. Mm-hmm. And so you're able to take a risk, even though he's not there right now. He's a development guy, a guy that you redshirt and build and mold into the kind of guy that you want. And I think that he might end up being a huge get. Hearing Rule talk about him yesterday was very encouraging, I would say.
Yeah, said one of the more impressive kids, young men, I should say, that he's seen in a camp setting, which speaks volumes because he's been in a lot of camp settings and was able to get that standardized test worked out and get the job done there. So kudos to him, man, because a lot of guys in his position, in the exact same position, maybe don't get that test score, and then they maybe have to go the junior college route. And sometimes those guys flourish and they get their, you know, their ducks in a row, and they go off and go D1 a couple of years later. But sometimes they don't. Sometimes they don't get that D1 opportunity right away, and they have to go to Navarro or to Trinity Valley or something like that. And then they just realize they don't love football as much, or the grades still aren't there. But fortunately for Elijah, he won't be that kind of a story. And so, yeah, another guy to be able to mold and kind of turn into what they want to, but he's got that base that they were looking for with his size. So Matt Rule, as you pointed out, let it be known that they want to give him some time. They don't want to have to play him right away. Now, obviously, they had to. They would, but they're hoping to not have to do that. And I mentioned that some out-of-state signings. He was the only player from the state of Texas that signed yesterday of the five. Everybody else was from out of state. So we mentioned Garmin Randolph being from Georgia, Elijah from Paris, Texas, and then there was wide receiver Yusuf Terry from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and Imhotep Institute. Here was a guy that did not sign during the first signing period. We kind of alluded to some things in his personal life that could be reasons as to why he didn't sign in December. Obviously, Fran Brown leaving to go to Temple seemed like that would be alluring to him. Of course, Rutgers then was hot and heavy on him as well. That's close to home, but I interviewed him yesterday along with my co-host Q, and you would think that staying closer to home would play in the favor of schools like Temple and Rutgers, when in actuality, come to find out, that worked against them, and that getting farther away from home actually was in Baylor's favor, which that's not often that really happens. But Yusuf straight up told us, he said, I needed to get out. Like, my mom wanted me to get out. He was in a really tough situation, really tough, you know, just environments. And he had been dealing as well with the loss of his father, tragically, back in the fall. That, I think it kind of been alluded to. We kind of talked, like, around a little bit. But he flat out came out and said it. And that was obviously something pretty out of nowhere and something unexpected and something pretty life-altering. And so for all the thoughts, and I incorrectly assumed as well, just based on the history of recruiting, that, oh, well, that's probably going to want to keep him closer to his brothers and his sister and his mother, when in fact that made them probably, if anything, push him away even further.
Yeah, that was one of the most interesting things I heard during that interview, was him saying that his family wanted him out.
Get out of Philly.
Get out of Philly. Get out of this environment. Go build something somewhere else, and it'll help you later on in life. But it is pretty crazy, because I've even talked to people on the staff that were concerned that being close to home was going to ultimately win out. So it wasn't just us not really knowing. And I think one thing I will say is I think that Yusuf, during the process, felt like it might be better to be close to home with his family, even though his family was urging him to go elsewhere, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. Yeah. You know, just being in the back of his mind a little bit, which
he's kind of the caretaker now. Yeah. I mean, his mom obviously is, but as far as like his brothers and sisters and whatnot, I mean, not having his father any longer. I'm sure he felt a heavy weight on his shoulders to probably have to be around and to probably in some ways provide and do all of that. It's a tough situation for a 17, 18-year-old young man.
Yeah, and I think that him waiting was actually one of the best decisions he's ever going to make in his life, because I think that extra month gave him time to really figure out exactly what he wanted. And so there were no regrets. I think he really, based on the interview, I think he really wants to be at Baylor. I think he's 100% committed to it. He found out, this is the place for me. I need to get out of here. He talked about how he wants his siblings to get out of there as well. And so I thought that was really interesting to hear that from him. And as far as a player, he gives Baylor that big receiver, 6'3". He's not huge, but, 6'3 is pretty tall. I mean, that's going to turn into quite the athlete. He he's a guy that I also think isn't anywhere near fully developed. I think that he's going to turn into an absolute playmaker for the Bears. I think he will redshirt this year. That's my thought on it. But I think he's going to put on the weight. I think he's going to add speed. I just think that he's a guy that has a very a lot of potential, I guess is what I'm saying, because he can grow so much. I don't think he was in an environment that was really conducive to building yourself into the top athlete in the country. And so now he comes to Baylor. He's going to take care of his diet. He's going to be able to take care of working out all the time. And he's a guy that talked about how he wants to go to the NFL. Mm-hmm. This is a business trip coming to Baylor is what he made it seem like. And I like that mindset. He's not here to play games. He's here to, you know, win games and make himself the best he can be. And that kind of mindset, that'll take you a long way in life.
Thought it was very cool to hear as well that he's an ice hockey player, as Matt Rule mentioned, and playing in a public league that they have there in Philadelphia, and that his grandfather works at the ice rink. And so they got to see him, I'm sure, in that setting. And you got to have some skills to play ice hockey now. I mean, that's not for the unathletic out there. So that was interesting to learn yesterday. But Matt Rule preached on and on about just the toughness that he has in every way, whether it be physically or mentally. And it was clear in his very glowing remarks about Yusuf that they feel like he's got a ton of upside. And, you know, Tyquan Thornton was a guy that was on some teams' radars, probably not to the extent that in hindsight, whenever he's fully developed and he's probably going to the NFL one day, there's going to be a lot of teams that go, why didn't we recruit that guy? I think Yusuf Terry might be one of those guys as well once he gets fully developed. But it's clear that they really like his toughness and that edge that was missing from the team 2 years ago. They just didn't have it. And they didn't have confidence. So it's hard to have edge when you don't have confidence. But you started to see more developed with this last year's squad. He's a guy that brings that edge that they've been looking for. So very happy for Yusuf, especially getting to talk to him a little bit and kind of knowing what he's coming from and all of that. He wants to put on for his family and make sure his family's secure, and he'll do that by starting his journey at Baylor, which is fantastic. And so I'm glad that we don't have to speculate too much further. Oh no, here comes Rutgers, or oh, there's Fran Brown at Temple. What a recruiting win for the Bears, and have Mom in their corner as well. I think it's a pretty big deal, and he, of all the players, I feel like has the most likely route to a red shirt simply because they're so loaded at wide receiver that he will be afforded that time to develop physically. And I think they feel like he's got a lot of room to grow there as well. So that was number three. Number four on the special team side of things, and this young man out of Oklahoma and Tulsa Union High School, a storied program nationally, Tulsa Union, Noah Rauschenberg. You know, you've got the situation there with Connor Martin and the torn ACL. Getting the kick blocked in the Texas Bowl versus Vanderbilt. Just saw that there's a transfer coming in as well for the Bears at kicker. Plus, you've got John Mayers, you got Jay Sedwick. So they're going to have like a handful of options, and who knows what the future holds for Connor Martin, but they're going to have a lot of options there. And Noah Rauschenberg will be one of those guys. And, you know, obviously Isaac Power, punter. And that's going to be a crowded kicking room. Just field goals, kickoffs, punting. They're going to have a few legs in that room.
Yeah, and he's going to end up being you know, a very important get for this class just because of the loss of Connor Martin. But you also talked about Josh Grant, who's the transfer from Western Michigan, and he's coming in as a walk-on. And so I'm not sure exactly how it works, since he's going to be a walk-on, if that means that he will be allowed to play next year. Mm-hmm. Not 100% sure on that yet.
But, I don't see why not.
Yeah, I don't either. And so my thing with that is I think that could give Rauschenberg time to develop and maybe be able to redshirt. Because Grant kicked a full season his freshman year, and then last year didn't really get to play as much for some reason. And so now
I see what you're saying as a transfer. Okay, yeah, right, as having to sit out of, I see what you mean. Yeah, I don't know.
So I'm not sure on that, just because he's coming in as a walk-on technically, but he's still transferring. So still trying to figure that out. But hopefully he's able to play and allow Rauschenberg to maybe redshirt his first year. And then figure it out. But either way, they're building depth in that room, quality depth, and it looks like they got the punter figured out with Isaac Power, and now they're trying to get the kicker figured out with these two guys. So great gets for Baylor. I think it's very important to have a specialist like that, as we've seen over the years. And so hopefully one of these guys can come in and earn that starting role, or, you know, what they have on campus maybe too.
And playing at Tulsa Union means he's had to make some big kicks as well. So, yeah, Noah Rauschenberg filling that kicker slot. And because of that depth they've started to add, whether it be via transfer or signings, and the time will tell on Connor Martin. He's obviously not likely to be ready for next year really whatsoever, maybe late in the year, but you wouldn't want to use him then at that point. That would be a bit of a waste. But they've got their ducks in a row on that side of the ball, so you would hope that some pretty good kicking in every form and fashion will emerge from that. And then there was the final piece to the puzzle, the number five signee on National Signing Day number two, and had to wait a little longer than expected. He was supposed to make his commitment at like 7:30 Central Time. 8 o'clock rolls around, and everybody's freaking out, going, oh my gosh, is this Isaiah Hookfin all over again? And it was not. It was just a little bit delayed, and the high school principal for Paul, actually the one breaking this news on Twitter, and I think seeing that tweet just actually made everybody breathe a deep sigh. Really, okay, cool, he is signing. He did have a decision to make. I know everybody felt pretty good about Baylor, but Paul Matavau Poile, signing with Baylor officially, and the young man out of Daly City High School, or Daly City, California, I should say, Jefferson High School, 6'4", 330, just more size and more help along the O-line. And this was a big recruiting win for them because, you know, Fresno State was a big threat being closer to home. I know he had other offers out there as well, but Paul Matavau Poile, and I'm saying it right, I got it right now. I know how to pronounce it because I saw his video, and I'll have it stick with me from now on. But yeah, that was a big get to close out this class, and I was kind of worried when the delay came in. I was like, oh man, is this going to be like the last time where everything's going so smoothly, and then all of a sudden there's one to two guys who aren't signing or aren't announcing when they're supposed to, and you're like, oh geez, are we going to end on a sour note on what was a really good day? Thankfully, that did not happen this time around, so the 2019 recruiting cycle ends on a big positive with hashtag PMP and the whole P2W, Paul the Waco, working out in the end.
Yeah, and it made Baylor 5 for 5 mm-hmm. on the guys they were going after. But yeah, PMP, great pickup.
That's what everybody's going to call him, right?
PMP.
I'm not going to call him Paul Matavau Poile. No.
PMP.
I'm calling him Paul Matavau Poile because I know how to say it.
But yeah, he was a tremendous get. And the reason I say that is because he's going to add something that I feel like they've been missing a little bit along the offensive line. And that's that punch. When a guard is pulling, that ability to really clear people out and create holes and that aggression. I mean, you look at his film, and he's just running people over half the time, throwing guys on the ground, showing the power. At 330 pounds, I think he could probably he's probably going to have to come in and put on some good weight, I would bet, much like Princeton Pines, mm-hmm. A guy that they got in last year's class. And I think those two are very similar, and those two are guys that for the future of this program could turn into the starting guards at some point. In their future, two very good players. But PMP, a guy that had 12 and a half sacks on the defensive side as well at nose tackle, he's just athletic and gifted, and a guy that Baylor is going to be very happy with getting. And UCLA tried to come in late. They offered him late, and that was one that worried me a little bit, just because it would be staying close to home and also being, you know, that high quality program.
I've been to UCLA. I've toured there. That's pretty tempting.
Yeah, and so I think that was a big part of it, and a big part of my concern at least. And then Kansas, someone posted that Kansas put out a little graphic and his name was on, and that was kind of weird as well.
On their TV, I guess, signing day show, and I don't know if it was like Fox Sports Kansas or whatever it was, but yeah, the graphic. And what was scary about that, Grayson, was that there was another young man who had not yet committed or signed, like the linebacker out of Oklahoma, that they had listed, and they actually had to pull it because he wasn't official yet. So they had put his name out there too early, and sure enough, when he did commit, he did in fact go to Kansas. And so it made you think, like, oh well, they knew about that before it was announced. Does that mean they already know that Paul is going to go there as well? But thankfully, that was not what happened.
Yeah, and the other interesting part, just as far as the UCLA side goes, is earlier in the day, I was watching the signing day show, and they were talking about how UCLA's mindset in this process has been waiting to offer kids. They haven't put out a ton of offers, and they've been waiting kind of to the last minute before they put out the offers because they just want to offer the guys that they really, really want and that meet, of course, you know, they have academic limits as well. And so that concerned me a little bit too, because they were talking about and saying how, you know, they're going to come in hard late. That's just what they were trying to do with this class, but it hasn't worked out very well for them. And it didn't work out in this case as well, as Baylor was able to land him. And another just, wow, going out of state and getting a kid from, you know, California. I mean, this staff just does a tremendous job of that. It seems like every year they're getting, you know, three or four guys from out of state, guys that fit their program, fit their mold that they couldn't find in the state. And that's so impressive to me.
Yeah, it really is. So you get a big defensive end out of SEC country there in Georgia who had SEC interest. You get the big offensive lineman out of Northeast Texas, your one Texas signee. You get the wide receiver out of Philadelphia. And Yusuf Terry, who, especially after talking to him and learning more about him, I'm just very happy for that young man. I hope it works out really well. I hope he doesn't, you know, get the kind of homesickness that you do have to wonder about, but that's for down the line. That's nothing to concern ourselves with now. I'm going to be rooting for him is what I'm saying. You get the kicker out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, and then the offensive lineman out of California. So, yeah, they went national with this second signing day, and you know, I think Rauschenberg was a little bit out of nowhere, but we kind of figured that something was going to have to be done at kicker after the Connor Martin injury. But Yusuf was a guy they obviously wanted the whole time. They never let up on him, and they're able to land him despite having, you know, other schools there in his backyard. Beat out an LSU, and some of the offers that Garmin Randolph had. Just a bang-up job by this staff. I mean, really a strong, strong close to what is a pretty nice little class. And he obviously, Matt Rhule, that is what I'm saying. He obviously was very happy with the end result. Sure, could there have been one or two guys that you would have loved to have added on as well? Yeah, probably, but that's every single class in America, save for maybe Alabama. But even then, you know, yesterday they're having guys flip to Georgia on them and stuff like that. So about as good as you could ask for, I think, coming off of the season that Baylor just had. You expected an uptick, and I think we got an uptick as far as the quality overall in this class.
Yeah, and we've talked about it some on the board that, you know, as far as ratings-wise go, rankings, you know, this class isn't going to be better than last year's class, but that's because they had to address certain positions that don't quite get as much love.
Yeah, kicker automatically drags you down.
Exactly, and so they took a lot of linemen as well with this class, so not as many, you know, just athletes. But this is a great class. Top to bottom, they address needs up front on both sides, which is an absolute must in every class, but this one in particular, they got the kind of guys they wanted. You know, those 6'5" plus, you know, three guys that can project to 300 pounds. They got it on both sides. And so very impressive there. A couple projects, guys that can develop. And then, of course, you know, the sure things, the guys that they feel like are sure things in this class. And then they got a quarterback as well, which you got to get every single year. So great job by this staff. I think this class is going to be another one that Baylor loves. And I think last year's is like that as well, as we already have found out with some of the talent that was in that class. So tremendous class. And I think people are going to really notice this class in the years to come. And Colt mentioned it might be the best defensive line class in Baylor's history by the time these guys graduate.
Very well could be. I honestly couldn't recall off the top of my head every D-line class that's been signed, but I can't think of any that were so special that I could really put up much of an argument. You know, maybe like one guy in each class, but I mean, nothing top to bottom where I'm like, oh man, that's the best D-line. So yeah, very well could be. Now, that was not the only news coming out of Matt Rhule's press conference yesterday or out of signing day. Everybody's been asking, what are we going to do about safeties coach? Who's the safeties coach? Had like people on Twitter harassing me, like I'm supposed to tell them and stuff. But I mean, I know we're all curious. We're all curious to see like what kind of changes are going to happen on the coaching staff, because obviously losing Fran Brown was big at the time, although it felt much bigger at the time than it has in hindsight, because I mean, they still recruited really stinking well. But a few changes. I think most notable has to be the fact that Joey McGuire will be moving to the defensive side of the football after spending the last 2 years as tight ends coach. And not only will he be moving over to the defensive side of the football, where his assignment, I think, is still a little bit up in the air, although Rhule, I think if he had to have chosen yesterday what Joey would be doing exactly, would be working with the linebackers to an extent. I think that's still kind of to be cemented. which will probably happen over the course of the next few weeks and into spring ball as well. But Joey is a defensive guy at heart, so he'll be back on that side of the football. That tight end room loved him, and so they will miss him, I'm sure, but obviously he's not going anywhere. He's just going to be coaching on the opposite side of the field. But even more notably than that is the fact that he has also now been named the associate or assistant head coach, replacing Fran Brown in that role, which, for those that don't know, is basically your number two head coach. I mean, that's the guy behind the guy. And so that is a big honor for Joey McGuire, and is something that is a big deal on his resume. He's made no bones about it. He said it this week. Yeah, I want to be a college football head coach one day. And this is him just further dipping his toes into the water, and he's just constantly learning. So now he'll get a little taste of defense on the college side of things and also in that role as the associate head coach. And kudos to him, man. I know he's a very much loved figure in Baylor, or at Baylor. I think the world of him, as most everyone does, and happy to see this for him. He's obviously fired up about it.
Yeah, this is a great move, I think, for this staff as a whole. Joey gets to go back on the side that really is his bread and butter, the defensive side of the football. That's what he loves to coach. That was his first love. Obviously came to Baylor, coached tight ends, and fell in love with that as well. So he's just a well-rounded coach, a well-rounded guy, just an awesome guy to talk to, and one that I think is going to do great things on the defense side of the football. And yeah, Rule mentioned maybe outside linebackers or something to that extent could be his role, working with Saravo, I would think, at the linebacker position. But I think that this is going to be this next year, because you talked about Fran a little bit. I think McGuire is going to take an even bigger role in recruiting. And we know what he has done in the state, but I think he's going to also be a guy that is going to be, you know, the top guy with Coop, mm-hmm. I think, as far as recruiting goes. And I don't think they'll miss too much of a beat with that. And I think Joey's just a great guy, and he relates to people really, really well. And I think he's going to do great things. Great addition to the defensive side as well.
Yeah, and I like the attitude that he has, and I think it'll benefit the defense. I really do. I think it'll bring another edge, if you will, to what they do defensively. So that was pretty big news. But elsewhere along the coaching staff, Marcus Satterfield, who came over from ETSU last year, he had been on staff with Matt Rule previously when they were at Temple. But then was the head coach over at ETSU up in Tennessee for a couple of seasons, then ended up finding himself at Baylor as the director of recruiting last year. He is going to take over, it looks like, the tight ends, with Joey McGuire moving over to the defensive side of the football. So Marcus Satterfield, who was not one of the main 10 assistants, now is in fact one of the main 10 assistants with this move. Frisman Jackson, in addition to being wide receivers coach, also now the passing game coordinator. You also had Mike Saravo adding the title in addition to linebackers coach of special teams coordinator, which they didn't really have a special teams coach. But we do know from our talks with Matt Rule over the course of the season that that was something that he, along with Mike Saravo, had really been in charge of, and so it only makes sense to really give him that title in addition to what he's also doing defensively. So Saravo gets that promotion and that bonus title of sorts, and also Evan Cooper now being named the recruiting coordinator, and also will be a main assistant on the defensive side of the football, where it looks as though he'll probably be coaching the corners. Phil Snow will coach the safeties in addition to being the DC, but Evan, a corner himself when he was playing, and obviously one heck of a recruiter, certainly deserving of their recruiting coordinator title, and now a big step up for him being one of the main 10 assistants. So that's what you're looking at. You got Satterfield, who's a new face, although he was on campus and a part of the staff last year, but now a new face as far as being on the field, on the offensive side of the football. Joey McGuire from tight ends coach to probably outside linebackers, but most definitely associate or assistant head coach. And then I ran down the others as well. Evan, now main 10 assistant and officially recruiting coordinator. Mike Saravo, special teams coordinator. It's a lot of moves, but very interesting ones for sure. And it was funny because I don't give myself a lot of credit. I don't take a lot of credit for anything. We would have learned all of this eventually anyways. But as that press conference was winding down, I was in our studios because my show was on the air at that time. So we were airing the press conference live. And as it was starting to kind of dwindle down a little bit, you could tell that there was probably only a couple of questions remaining. I shot a text over to Paul Catalina saying, hey, ask about the safeties coach, because I know that's been a hot button topic for everybody. And that led into all of his news. Like he kind of, you know, he's like, oh, do we want to talk about this? We haven't sent out a press release, blah, blah, blah. But he eventually did, and when he did so, he also mentioned all the other moves that we really weren't aware of. So glad that I sent that text, because that was cool to find out all that information yesterday.
Yeah, I'm glad you sent that out too, because he just kind of went through the whole rundown of everything.
Yeah, he did. It was awesome.
He wasn't sure if he should or not.
And
but
then he went all in, right?
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to mention one thing quickly on Joey. Earlier in the process, because I had been getting asked all kinds of questions. Who's going to be the next coach on staff? Who's going to be this? Who's going to be that? I actually asked him if maybe moving to defense would be something. He was like, he loves the tight end job. So I just wanted to throw that out there, that he really did love the offensive side as well. So, but yeah, I love this for him. He's going to do great things. But as far as the other ones that were announced, I thought it was really cool to see, you know, they promote Satterfield. And I went and looked at what Satterfield had done previously, and he was the offense coordinator from 2013 to 2015 at Temple. And that 2015 season was the year they went 10-4, and the offense put up 30 points a game, had nearly 400 yards of offense per game. So, I mean, you're having a guy that coached big-time football, was an offensive coordinator, as just a tight ends coach now on your staff. That's going to be a nice addition, I think. I mean, that's just another mind in there that has coached big time football, has called plays, been a guy that's had to do a whole lot. And so I think that's going to end up being a sneaky good hire for Baylor. As far as Cooper goes with coaching the corners, that's great. I think we kind of all saw that coming, that he was going to end up taking that role and just running with it. I think he's going to do great. He's going to have to take another step up in recruiting, I think. Like he hasn't done it already.
I was gonna say, how much higher gonna go?
I think that he's going to have to be around even more.
Right.
Because, you know, he's been able to focus a little bit on Florida at times. And I think he's going to be asked to just go everywhere.
Yeah.
Because he's going to take over Fran's role while also doing his role. And having, and then of course coaching a position now, so he's going to take a big step up. But I'm happy for him. He's going to do great things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he was thrilled when we talked to him too. For those that want to listen, Joey McGuire, Evan Cooper are up on the radio station website. Frisman Jackson, I believe, will be on there by late Friday. He's scheduled to join the afternoon show. And I may be forgetting somebody, but those two in particular, and those were the two big moves I think that were kind of announced. Those are up there, and Evan, you could hear him smiling through the phone, if that makes sense, like as far as this opportunity goes. So fired up for him.
Yeah, and he was being groomed for this, I think. I just think it was such a natural move for him, and that's great. And then Saravo taking over special teams, it's probably a good thing that they got someone really focused on special teams. That could end up really benefiting them as the season progresses. But I think these were really good hires, and ones that it's not overly flashy, but I think that as you dig deeper, these could end up being, you know, home run hires, even though they just did it internally.
Yep. So there is all the changes and additions and everything else that's going on for the coaching staff and also the five new signees. We'll get into your mailbag questions in just a moment, but let's mention real quickly Baylor basketball. Lady Bears still number one in the country. They had a close call against UT on Monday night, a game that they were fully in control of and then just stopped making shots, got a little sloppy. Texas, to their credit, really turned it on. They started hitting a bunch of shots. Luckily, Lady Bears escape Austin with a W, but the same could not be said for the Baylor men as their six-game win streak comes to a close. And really, it wasn't all that close against UT. I know there was some thought that this wasn't a great matchup for them just because of the size and length that Texas has. And sure enough, they focus in, locked in on Mekhi Mason, who we also learned has a foot injury now, which is highly concerning because they are not the same team without Mekhi Mason playing at a high level, especially fresh off that 40-point game that was just amazing. They've got K-State now rolling in. Good news, you beat K-State, you're in first place. But if you lose to K-State, that's a couple games in a row. And you kind of wonder, are we cooling off a little bit here? Is Mason healthy? But in Austin, as far as that game goes, Grayson, and there's a big one Saturday at the Ferrell Center with the Wildcats, who are leading the Big 12 right now. That game against the Longhorns, I mean, they just got outplayed. And I know the officiating wasn't great, but even if it was even, I still feel like Texas wins that game and wins it convincingly.
Yeah, they were just the better team on that night, just being honest. And really, everyone's concern was with their bigs being the biggest issue, but their guards flat out outplayed Baylor's guards all night. They were more physical, and yes, that does have something to do with the officiating. I get that, but they were the more physical team, period. And they let it be known. They were coming out driving hard to the rim, trying to create fouls, and they were getting those calls, but they were trying to create them. And so it was one of the first games we've seen in a while where the Baylor guards were outplayed by the Texas, by another school's guards. And so without Mekhi Mason on the floor, it made things a little more difficult for Baylor, of course, because, you know, Mekhi's been the best player on the team throughout the season, and this was probably his worst game of the year.
Yep.
And so it came at the worst time, but here's the deal. Baylor gets to come back home for two straight games against Kansas State and Oklahoma. They win both. They're sitting in great shape. If they lose to K-State, yeah, you're starting to take a step back, but they need to at least split. But, you know, if you want to win the Big 12, you got to win all your home games.
Yep.
So that's kind of the point that I'm making. If they lose one, probably out of the race. If they win both, they're squarely in the race.
Yeah, and they you know, they could very well fall to K-State. I don't think anybody would be shocked by that. Luckily, they'd have Oklahoma right after that. You would hope that that would be a get-right game, but hopefully you don't need a get-right game. They can win on Saturday in the Ferrell Center. That would be a big W, and then any cases being made of them not being tournament-worthy would be that much harder to try and justify. Really thought they were going to crack the top 25. Was kind of glad that they didn't, just disappointed that they didn't, and instead of having that chip on their shoulder, they just played a team with more of a chip on their shoulder. So that was a little bit disappointing. But hey, six game win streak, I mean, on the road, a team that really needed that win in Texas, mind you, as well. And they played maybe their best game of the year. They don't shoot like that normally. That was just their night, basically, is what I, you know, what I walked away feeling like.
Yeah, I think so too. They played their best game of the year. I mean, even the commentators, you know, as the game was on Longhorn Network, made it almost unbearable to listen to, but they mentioned how Matt Coleman was having the best game he's had all year, and if he plays like this, Texas can do, you know, amazing things or whatever, but he hasn't done that all year long. And then he had his best game of the season against Baylor. But I do want to mention, I think these next two games are so important, because as you look forward into Baylor's schedule, they still have to go to Texas Tech, to Iowa State, to Kansas State, and to Kansas at the end of the year. That is the four, I would say, four best teams besides Baylor in the entire conference.
Yep.
That they still have to go on the road to. So I think these two are must wins for them to win the conference. Got to get at least one, I think, for tournament, you know, hopes wise. But yeah, big game. I would hope a lot of people would show up to that Kansas State game. It's a huge one.
Yeah.
In the Big 12 race.
And K-State's a fun team to watch. So, I mean, you go to the Ferrell Center to see a pretty good Baylor team, you also see a really good K-State team as well. So definitely pack the Ferrell Center this weekend and support the guys. And we'll learn a lot more about Mekhi Mason and his status depending on what all he does or does not do on Saturday. I want to get into some mailbag questions here.
Let's do it.
Let's get into the mailbag. You provided us a lot of questions this week, and we'll start off with ATeneo24. Do we know the status of Jalen Ellis's injury? There was a fear of a torn ACL, but I don't think anything was confirmed. And nothing's been confirmed really since, I don't believe.
No, I don't think so, but I'm trying to remember. I thought, I don't want to get it wrong, but I thought that he posted something that he was, you know, doing the bike. Mm-hmm. And people had mentioned you sometimes do that and then have the surgery, like you get it kind of a little bit stronger and then you have the surgery. I don't want to say that he for sure does, because I haven't been for sure told, but I'm pretty sure
all signs point to
it. Yes. Yeah, that's what I would say on that.
Yeah, all signs point to it. ZT Smith, and then we'll just go back and forth with the questions. But ZT Smith, 423, any word if we're hiring another secondary coach? Well, we just mentioned that. Evan Cooper taking over corners and Phil Snow with the safeties. The spot left vacant really by Fran Brown goes to Marcus Satterfield, pretty much. How big of a get was Randolph in y'all's opinion?
Huge. I mean, this is a guy, like we talked about, that has a very high ceiling, especially with the loss at BJ Thompson. You're going to need as many bodies as possible to play that position. So I think in the short term, it's big just because you need guys to throw out there that are, you know, good enough to kind of lower that blow, I guess, shorten it a little bit from that loss. And then in the future, I think that he's a guy that has a very high ceiling. I mean, if I'm comparing him to a guy that won Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year by his senior year, it means that there's the potential there for him to really be that kind of player. And he's got the frame, the body, the athleticism to do it. It's just a matter of, can he come in, put the work in, put the weight on, and get to that point?
Yeah, I think it was huge. I think, you know, he himself is a huge guy who's only going to get bigger. They could really use help along the defensive line and could really use difference makers there, and I think he's got the potential to do that. So I think he was pretty big. And to beat out some of the teams they beat out to get him, to go into Georgia, I mean, when's the last time, really, I mean, except for the twice now in this class with he and Howard, but I don't remember many Georgia ever at Baylor. Like, the 5 years that I've been here, certainly haven't seen any, so that was that I can think of. So that was a you know, big national get in some ways as well.
Yeah, and he had a great offer list. So, yeah, I agree 100% with you. And then love the podcast, guys. Great work. So thanks, ZT Smith. We really appreciate it. Crash, when is Dex coming on the pod to defend his dissertation? Oh, I hope never. I
can tell you that's never going to happen. I mean, I can tell you right now that's not going to happen. That was weird, wasn't it?
Yeah,
that
was... Yeah, I don't think that I'd be okay with listening to some of the comments that he said sitting in our studio.
Well, you know, it'd be one thing, and I don't know him, so I don't want to, like, bash too much. I'm sure it was – I mean, I'm trying to give the benefit of the doubt, but the response to the backlash was so horrific that he'll never receive an invite. I mean, it was just a ridiculous response to being in the wrong. And now you can say, well, was he in the wrong? Because an opinion is an opinion, right? And all of that, but just some of the vulgarity in responding to Baylor fans, I have no interest in that. So that's a no go ever.
Yeah,
probably.
I agree with you. And then of course his, you know, apology on our board was also not the greatest ever either. So yeah,
I mean, hey, we all have our moments. I've certainly typed things on Twitter. I'm like, man, I shouldn't have typed that. But you know, it's just better to not dwell on that and for everybody to just move on along. He does love Baylor, best I can tell, and you know, I think meant well ultimately. Just the timing was really, really poor. And if you can't acknowledge that, then I mean that stubbornness just doesn't go well for folks.
No, and no one responds well to that. So, but I'm with you. Yeah, people just need to move on from it. It happened, but he's probably not getting an invite onto the podcast. So thanks for the question, Crash. Stifler's mom, has the status of Eliasa Anderson been determined? Do we know if he's in Waco, enrolled in classes, or participating in the winter conditioning program?
Best I can tell, I mean, he's still in the transfer portal. He's not in classes that I'm aware of, and so that would certainly mean he's not a part of winter conditioning. I feel like Eliasa, with changing his Twitter profile and all of that, I think it's like a picture of him in high school or something, and it has been that way maybe for longer than I realized, but there's just no mention of Baylor whatsoever, and I still don't quite understand that whole thing because he got a lot more playing time this past year than he ever would have seen had the numbers been normal. He got to see the field a lot more simply because they were low on numbers and experience. And so, you know, he made some good strides. Who knows? I mean, maybe it could be a variety of issues. You know, we have no idea with these guys, but, you know, maybe it's a feeling of getting passed over, being out recruited over or something. But all the writing seems to suggest that he's not going to be back.
Yeah, that's kind of what it looks like. But as we're seeing guys go into the transfer portal and then come back, we've seen that a couple times. So maybe that happens. It confuses me, too. I get the impression that maybe, you know, the fact that he came in and played a couple games and felt like maybe he played well,
right,
that maybe he deserves, you know, playing time or something like that. So don't really know the whole scoop there, but I do know he's still in the transfer portal. I don't believe he's participating in any conditioning, and I don't believe he's in class right now. So that's pretty much all we have on that.
So looking at the numbers, there's one free scholarship probably. And don't forget, and I don't know how this staff is going to approach guys, because I'm sure the longer they're around, the more instances of this will occur. But they do have the option now that he's in the transfer portal to pull his scholarship. So depending on how that relationship is, or if there's another instance like this in the future, that option is there for them on the table as well. So it'll be interesting to see if they go that route or if they already know that he's gone anyways, but that is a scholarship potentially, or you have your offensive lineman back, although it doesn't look like that's probably going to be the case. Alpha Needle, Craig, your view on how Atlanta did hosting the Super Bowl, which is better, Jerry World or Arthur Land? I thought Atlanta did great. There was some really cold, nasty weather the first few days that we were there that kind of hurt the experience, at least those first couple of days, because, you know, you want to be outside downtown walking around, going to and fro, and we're still able to do all that. Just wasn't ideal, you know, walking around outside weather, like real harsh winds kind of slicing through. But that was a minor complaint to what was a really great trip. Got a lot of great interviews, met a lot of great people. Got to go to a wrestling show that was a blast, and got to, you know, further hang out with my 1660 comrades. So I had a blast. I thought Atlanta did really well. It was my first time ever being in Atlanta, other than the one time I was in the airport for like an hour on a layover. So I don't count that. So now I can say, yeah, I've been to Atlanta. I've experienced Atlanta. And I hope to go back one day. My only bummer was that the College Football Hall of Fame was right down the street, and I had even taken a picture the first day we were there saying, and I'd put it up on my Instagram, I believe, or maybe Twitter, but I put it up saying, hey, hope to find some time to make it here. When we arrived, those first 2 days, I was sick. I was sick as a dog. Just got whatever's going around this time of year. So recover from that, you know, still knocked out some shows and did everything, but we got so busy. So Friday comes rolling around, I'm like, okay, I'm leaving on Saturday. I'm going to the College Football Hall of Fame as soon as my show's over with. They close the dadgum thing down during Super Bowl week, mind you, when there's like several extra thousand people in the downtown vicinity than there normally are. They close it down at 4 o'clock on Friday afternoon. So I walk over there at like 3:45 thinking I got, you know, a couple hours to knock this bad boy out, and they were closed. And so that was really disappointing, because I love college football and would love to have walked around there, but I'll just have to make a return trip. So I really liked it. As far as better, you know, I really like Jerry's World, but I'd have to say Arthur Land is nicer. It's newer. It's shinier. It's a better stadium now. But Jerry's World is still top-notch, no doubt about it. Also, who was one recruit in 2019 that we didn't get but we'll wish we had when we look back in 5 years?
So I do believe that Isaiah Hookfin's going to end up being a pretty big loss if he does, you know, go into Texas and make it the way that I think he would have at Baylor. I really think he's going to be a very good player.
He must be really adept at lying and deceiving people once he graduates Texas.
Yeah, exactly. I think he's a guard prospect, but I think he's going to be one that maybe we look back on and maybe wish Baylor would have gotten him. I think the other name that comes to mind is Demarius Good. He's going to UCF, though.
I forgot about him already. Yeah.
He's going to UCF, though, so I don't know if he's going to end up being as big of a loss as, you know, maybe. I know UCF's building a program, but we'll see if they're able to keep it the way that it is right now. But I think he was going to be a very special athlete for Baylor, and so I'd probably say those two. There were a few more throughout the process that were high on Baylor that Baylor didn't get that I really liked as prospects. Another that comes to mind is Nnamdi Adeyemadumir, who's going to Minnesota. I liked him at defensive end. They sure could have used another defensive end in this class. So, yeah, I mean, those are a couple of the names. Obviously, there are guys that weren't within reach
right. That
would have counted as well, but those are kind of the main names that come to mind. So thanks for the question, Alpha Needle. Grand Grizz 65, with all the new signees in place, what is your win-loss best guess for 2019? That's, of course, if all stay healthy. Please include overall and conference records. Thanks.
Okay. I will say 8-4. And let me see. In conference play, five and four.
Yeah, they're going to win their first three games in the non-con, I think.
That comes sure better.
Yeah. They're going to win those three. And I at best guess right now, without seeing spring, without seeing things like that, I'm with you. Eight and four, 5-4 in conference. That's kind of where I'm at.
And then obviously the potential for a bowl game. You could win perhaps nine games, but regular season, yeah, going to go 8-4. And go from there. And I think even though that would be a one-game improvement technically, although you'd have the potential because you'd be bowl eligible to win nine games, I think that would still be a massive step. I mean, 8-4 just looks different. You know what I mean? That's just you're right there on the verge type of a record. So, yeah, we'll both go 8-4 there. My turn?
Yeah.
Wando. What's up, Wando? I like that name. Football, what is your prediction for who starts on the O-line to start the season?
So I got left tackle Connor Galvin.
Tecklenburg at center, obviously.
Yeah, Tech at center. I got Giancarlo at left guard, and I got Xavier Newman at right guard. And then I got Blake Bettier at right tackle.
Okay.
That's kind of where I'm thinking it ends up.
Connor Galvin at left tackle?
Yeah, I kind of get the feeling that maybe since Connor played there last year that might be where he's better at.
Okay.
Because you know how that works out sometimes. They're just better.
What a big offseason for him, too, coming up.
Yeah, this could be a huge one. I could also see them flipping if Connor shows the ability at right tackle as well. Maybe Bettier does play left. And then, of course, you got Froome Morgan. You got great depth there. At the tackle position, finally, and Casey Phillips as well. But that's kind of the lineup I'm going with. The guards, I'm curious if any of the young guys take a step up and maybe compete for a job. So we'll see how that ends up. But those are my five right now that I would guess.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was waiting for you to mention Froome Morgan. It'll be interesting what kind of offseason. I saw him in a couple of the videos they've already posted, and he seems healthy and everything. Obviously, injuries kind of delayed his progress and his fitting in last year, but he'll be involved in some capacity. And I think that if he's not in the starting lineup, as much as there was kind of this anticipation, just because simply where he came from, that may be a good thing, actually, because he's not proven so far to be reliable week in and week out. So let's say he was a starting right tackle or something, you'd always be kind of concerned of, okay, is he going to be healthy for the entire season, but in a reserve role, adding even more depth and still seeing plenty of snaps, I think that'd be great. I definitely feel like they need to kind of, and I know they love to rotate and they love to do all of that, but it would be kind of nice to see them sort of find the five, you know what I mean? And,
yeah,
and provide that stability, but then also have, you know, 10 other guys depth-wise ready to go.
Yeah, having the cohesiveness, I agree, would be huge for this team. And they rotate guys, like you mentioned, occasionally throughout the game as well. So I think either way, whoever starts at the tackles, the backup tackle, we know Baylor's going to have a quality one, which is great to see that. I'm curious if maybe Froome Morgan can battle Galvin a little bit and push him and maybe take over the starting job, and maybe Froome Morgan and Bettier get the start, and maybe, just maybe by some miracle, and I know this is probably, I mean, I know this is way overly optimistic, but if Connor Galvin could get his redshirt year back, that'd be amazing, too.
Yeah.
See it happening. But
I don't see it happening, just like with Xavier Newman. Although, I think Newman's is more by choice, whereas I think Galvin would perhaps be open to it, but now he's got a little taste as well. And maybe he's just too good to do it. I mean, that's what you hope, is he has a big freshman to sophomore jump, and he's ready to go and be your starter for the next 3 years. That would be very ideal. The second part of that question, on the Sikkim 365 premium boards, was Tristan Clark's knee injury a torn ACL? Surprising to see him on the bench just 2 days after surgery, based on personal experience. I've never seen an exact diagnosis other than knee, so that leads me to believe after having knee surgery that, yeah, it was in fact a torn ACL. Now, I don't know that to be sure. Even in the school release, there was no clarification whatsoever, and I can't recall if maybe I saw some type of a clarification, but it didn't come from Baylor, I don't believe.
Yeah, I don't think so either, but I know he had surgery on it already. And as far as, you know, seeing him on the bench just 2 days after his surgery,
mm-hmm.
I mean, my dad had a torn ACL, and he was walking on it
yeah.
a little bit after as well, gingerly, mm-hmm. but walking on it.
Yeah, if Ashley can get away from the equestrian boards, maybe he can answer that a little bit better for you. Just kidding. What's up, Ashley?
Hopefully you can, but thanks for the question, Wando. Defang BU, when is Coach Grunthuffer gonna actually give us some five-star recruits. I was promised a national championship. Well, you know, I will say this, answering it truthfully. It is tough to watch, you know, Texas A&M, Texas, those schools landing, you know, all these big-time recruits after every single visit, it seems like. A&M had the big Super Bowl visit and got two guys, including one guy that really liked Baylor.
Jalen Jones.
Jalen Jones, yeah. Out of Steele. I think Baylor was in second, but a distant second. And so behind A&M, he committed there for 2020, and that's just the way it is.
Got to go win the Big 12, bud.
Exactly.
And even then, you'll probably only get one every couple of years, because even at their highest in 2013, 14, 15, they maybe got one, you know, maybe. Yeah. And even then, most of the time, it was actually just high, high four stars like KD Cannon, Jarrett Stidham. Jarrett Stidham wasn't even a five star. No. So I think that's kind of the ceiling most of the time. And then every once in a while, you'll get that Robbie Rhodes or that, you know, the guy who has the tag. But I mean, as the evidence of the guy I just used, doesn't always mean what you think it will eventually mean.
Yeah, and one thing I will say is, you know, that 2016 class was finally kind of the breaking through of getting multiple high-end guys, you know, Pat Hudson, you know, guys on the offensive line, a top three offensive lineman in the state was Pat Hudson. So being able to be competitive and land those guys is going to require not only, you know, competing in the Big 12, but, yeah, winning a Big 12 championship and showing that you're that caliber of a program and getting guys in the NFL, which is something that A&M has done a really good job of, and that Jimbo has done a really good job of. And, you know, Herman's going to send guys to the NFL as well. And I think that becomes a factor too. So as those things go, the recruiting will go, but I'm doing everything I can, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, though. I'm not as impressed necessarily with the Texas side of things as far as putting guys in the pros, because even at their worst, they're still putting guys constantly in the pros just basically because they got future pro guys on the recruiting trail. So that's hopefully what you are eventually able to do. But yeah, A&M's recruiting efforts over the last few years certainly paying off with the Von Millers, and the list goes on and on. Christian Kirk's, you know, recently. But, you know, it's just going to take some time to kind of get that back. And we're still a couple of years away, quite frankly, from seeing a full class under Matt Rhule. So once Charlie Brewer and Tristan Ebner and John Lovett and all those guys are seniors here in a couple of years, you know, we'll kind of see. Maybe the ball gets to rolling a little bit. But for right now, you know, it's your transfers most recently are the guys who have the NFL shots, like Jalen Hurd and Derek Thomas, who were invited to the Combine. No invite for Jalen McClendon. I hate that for him, but I think DT is going to do really, really well, and I think Jalen Hurd will be a fascinating case to watch as far as how he's handled by NFL teams. Sikkim, Kentucky, it's the 11th hour. The battle for Garmin-Randolph is in full swing. LSU's in his ear about future sanctions that Baylor's facing and Rhule's flirtations with the NFL. Randolph calls Rhule wanting to be reassured of his decision to pick BU, but reiterates these concerns. What does Rhule say in response? How in the world is he winning battles against LSU when those are real factors? Well, a word that you just said, I think, is what matters a lot, and that is the word real. This staff keeps it 100% real. Some claim that is their, that's their MO. They are just as truthful as all possible. So instead of lying about interviewing for jobs or lying, oh, I wasn't ever really interested in the Jets or whatever, they just tell them, like, how it is. And there's some prospects that aren't going to like that, or that won't be enough reassurance for them. And there's other prospects that say, you know what, I trust you, I believe you, and I'm going to roll with you. And those are the types of guys they're going to get, rather than the ones that need to be told, and hey, no, I promise, I'm going to be here for 4 years. And then you turn around, you lie. It's how you develop a scumbag reputation. So they're just going to keep it 100, so to speak, and that's how I think they ultimately win some of these battles.
Yeah, I agree 100% with everything you just said. And one thing, since you're talking Garmin Randolph, and that's a specific case, I think as far as them winning the battle over LSU, it comes down to Baylor's number one priority at the end was Randolph and PMP. They knew they were getting, you know, Elijah Ellis. They knew they were getting Yusuf. They got Noah already. Those two, they wanted to finish their class with those two. They were the priority. Absolute, you're going to come in. We need you. LSU, on the other hand, their pitch was, oh, we have one tight end in this class. We'd like to take another, so we'd like to have you. But Baylor was straight up, we want you. We might need you to play next year. We might need you to not redshirt next year and things like that. And I think that, like you said, it goes to just being real, but it's also showing that they're a priority. They're needed. They're wanted by this staff, and that's a big deal and an underrated thing that Baylor can offer to a lot of prospects that those bigger schools can't. And that's a way that you win these type of battles by just being real truthful and showing that, you know, these are guys that they really want and believe in and trust in and
have a plan for.
Exactly. And telling Garmin, hey, man, every other school wants you at tight end. We think you're going to be better at defensive end. We think that you can make it to the NFL at defensive end. We think you'll have a better career at defensive end. And pitching that to him and showing him exactly how that can happen. That's something recruits have talked about all the time. When they go on visits, they're told exactly how they're going to be utilized and exactly how the staff views them and thinks that their potential can be. And I think that resonates really well with certain guys. I think in this case, Garmin really believes in this staff, and ultimately that's how they won this one.
Yeah, some will need their ego stroked. That's just a part of recruiting. But there's others that this staff speaks their language, and this staff, like I said, is going to be 100% real. That'll work for some, won't work for others. But for the ones that it does work on, they come in, they buy into the process, and you know, again, we're still a couple years away from seeing a full revolution of the process here at Baylor. But you look at just the strides made by some players from year one to year two, and it's just like, whoa, imagine what it's going to be like in year three and in year four. And as long as that happens more often than it doesn't, and then those guys all of a sudden start going off into the pros and then start finding some success, and the longer Matt Rule's around and the staff's, you know, the main components of the staff stick around, I mean, that's building, man. That's what Matt Rule talked about. His opening press conference was build, 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 and you're seeing those blocks in place. Is it as high or as nice of a building as you want it to be just yet? No, but there's no doubt a foundation has been laid and now been built upon as well as of year number two.
Yeah, absolutely. So thanks for the question, Sikkim, Kentucky. CV Bear, do you believe that Elijah Ellis will make it onto campus? Yes, I do. I just don't think that they would have offered him if they didn't think that, or if that wasn't already pretty much set.
Yeah, and as of yesterday, it's done. So, I mean, he's got his grades in order. So, as far as I'm concerned, there's nothing that's standing in his way unless he just stopped going to classes, which, yeah. You know, I don't think they're going to allow that to happen. And hopefully the good fine folks in Paris, Texas wouldn't allow that to happen either. CD Bear with a follow-up.
Now that recruiting is done for 2019, what is your favorite story from this recruiting cycle?
Well, I'm not going to really have too many personal stories as far as talking to recruits and whatnot, and the stories that automatically come to mind aren't even the good ones. It's like Hook Finn and stuff like that. So actually, you know what? It's Yusuf Terry, after talking to him, now that I don't want to pretend like I know him in any way, but just knowing more of his backstory, knowing why there was a delay, knowing why he's headed to Waco instead of staying in the Northeast, that comes to mind. So yeah, the story of Yusuf Terry, perseverance, and just being a strong young man, having to deal with a whole heck of a lot and not a nice area, getting himself this opportunity for he and his family, I think is a fantastic story.
Yeah, for me, I mean, I had multiple. I've talked about the Eric Young, Bobby Wolf one my first day here, talking to them, going to a hotel down the road and interviewing them, and then them say, oh, we're going to wait forever, take our time, and then they committed to A&M the next weekend, mm-hmm. or Bobby did, the next day, I'm sorry, after leaving Baylor. So that was an interesting one. Hakeem Vance's mom, as I'm going into Tommy Bush's signing day ceremony, telling me that Hakeem Vance committed, that was another big one. So I'm you know, I'm on cloud nine. Oh, Hakeem Vance going to Baylor, wow, I sent it to Colt, he posted it, how awesome, we got the scoop. And I'm going into, you know, we know Tommy Bush is about to commit to Baylor. He's been a longtime guy that's for sure going to be a Baylor Bear. Go in and sit there for an hour, and then he chooses Georgia.
That's so strange.
So a bunch of just, you know, that was another weird one. I mean, there were so many. Doing the commitment video for Jacob Zeno was really cool.
It had to be pretty cool.
That was a lot of fun. So lots of really cool stories. You know, a couple just funny ones that just, you know, aren't extremely relevant. But it's just one of those where kids will tell you one thing and then, you know, they go do something else. And that's just the nature of the business.
Yeah. So thank you, CV Bear, for those questions. One Truckin' Bear fan. First, I want to start off by saying thank you for all you do to bring us this podcast each and every week. I really enjoy it and look forward to it each Friday. Well, thank you. We appreciate that, definitely. Thank you for listening. My question is, which wideout back do you think will have the best upcoming season, and your prediction for total yards and our touchdowns, and your prediction for defensive MVP? Most tackles wreaks the most havoc. So let's start off with wideout back you think will have the best upcoming season, and then the total yards TDs.
I think wide receiver, I mean, if it's not Denzel Mims, there's a problem.
Yes, sir.
It's got to be him. I think he'll have 1,000-plus yards and 10-plus touchdowns. So I think he'll be – I think he's going to have a fantastic year and he better, honestly. Yeah. It's his time. It's his time to be the guy again.
Yeah, and I think with the running backs, they're going to share so much still that it'll be kind of hard, because I do see a scenario where one week it's John Lovett having a big game, and then one week it's Treston Ebner, and then one week it's maybe Jamichael Hasty. So the backs are kind of crowded. So, the most logical candidate, other than Denzel, would probably be Tyquan Thornton at the moment, along with maybe Chris Platt. But based on what Platt did last year, I'm not real high on big stats from him. Tyquan, I think, could be really good, but it needs to be Denzel Mims. It needs to be him. He needs to be the guy that steps in the shoes of Jalen Hurd. Not necessarily the same exact style, but as far as the go-to guy, it needs to be him. And I'd say 1,100 yards somewhere along there and 10, 11 touchdowns would be ideal, an ideal season for him, and that's what I would hope to see. So that's what I'll predict here. As far as defensive MVP, most tackles, who wreaks the most havoc? James Lynch.
Okay, yeah.
Easy I don't know one. About most tackles, but I'm say defensive MVP, I'm going to go James Lynch.
Yeah, most tackles, and I think the second most likely candidate to be defensive MVP is Clay Johnston.
Yeah, most tackles, I would say Clay Johnston.
If he can stay healthy, I mean, the dude had I don't even know the exact number, but he had a ton of tackles last year. He led the team in tackles despite not even playing in three games.
Mm-hmm.
So he's
being healthy in like any of them.
Right. And so I think this is a big offseason for him. If he can just stay healthy, I think he's going to be an absolute problem this year. I mean, he's going to be a senior. It's his time to shine, really, and prove that he can be a pro. I think he's going to be absolutely awesome. James Lynch is going to be phenomenal, too. Coach Rhule talked about him. He just continues to grow and grow. And, hopefully he doesn't do, overly amazing, because Baylor sure would like to have him for two straight years, right?
Yeah, of course. And who knows? I mean, he needs to have a really – he'd have to have a really, really good season, and he needs to do that first. But, yeah, there's that thought kind of distance away, that there's that small possibility that stands right now. But, yeah, I mean, Clay and James will be the GOAT. Those will be the faces of the defense next year. Clay being the linebacker, I'd say more tackles, and that's just what he did this year as well. Now, whereas James may be the one that causes the most havoc in the backfield, so that's where we'll go with that.
Yeah, and I wanted to mention, if James were to leave, that's just one of those things that we talked about, how, you know, A&M and Texas putting guys in the NFL – you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing, because you're taking a guy that's only been on campus 3 years and turning him into an NFL prospect. That's pretty amazing in itself.
If it's like a first round pick.
Right, right.
Yeah, I don't think you get much off of a guy leaving early and then he goes in like the fourth round. I don't think that really does anything for you. But yeah, if he's like a first round pick as a junior, then sure, that's going to really benefit the program.
Yeah. So thanks for the question, One Truck and Bear fan. Onward Go 19. How do you see the new recruits fitting into their position groups? You think some will leap our vets? Do you think they have some work to do? How many do you feel will be redshirted? Excited to see their growth.
Well, I think like at least half of them are going to be redshirted, at least. I don't see too many of them leaping over guys in front of them right now, because I think this is still a relatively young group and there's not really a whole lot of room for guys to jump over. Even at safety, which was the biggest problem child this past year, JT and Christian, I feel like, are going to, you know, obviously Chris Miller is back there as well for a final year. So even there, even though that's a position where you think, oh, there could be improvement, there's guys, though, that have already dipped their toes in or waiting in the wings to improve it. So I don't know. Off the top of my head, I don't really see anybody just leaping off into the starting lineup unless, it's like a spot on the line or something. Maybe on the defensive line, perhaps. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I think as far as leaping, I think the obvious candidates are Zuzua and Battier.
Yeah.
I think they're going to play. And so they're going to leap over, not really. But they're vets. I mean, they're older guys. So they're, you know, so I wouldn't count them as, you know, leaping over, but they won't be redshirted. As far as other positions, I could see, you know, Randolph and Jones possibly. They're going to get some reps, no doubt. They're going to play some. I think Logan Compton will play some as well.
Will Williams
will maybe get some run. He's got to put on weight, though. Mm-hmm. But my thing is a lot of them will get in four games. I think you're going to see Will Williams flying around on special teams, no doubt. Right. I mean, that is absolutely happening. But I'm curious to see, you know, the progress these guys make. The most natural is guys that early enrolled to see playing time, but there's just not a lot of room. This was a young team last year. They return a ton of starters, and the areas of improvement, I would say, you know, safety, linebacker, offensive line, and maybe defensive line right now, all have veteran guys that I think are going to be just fine at their position. But yeah, Jones, Randolph, Bettier, Zuzua, and maybe one of those interior defensive linemen like a TJ Franklin or a Isaiah Howard or a Gabe Paul, maybe they get into the rotation, but I don't necessarily see them passing guys in front of them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, agreed there. Barely Interested, love the podcast, have never missed one yet. Well, we appreciate that, Barely Interested. Nothing more enjoyable than taking a long run listening to you boys knowledgeably pontificate on BU sports. I was very happy with the staff shakeup announced by CMR in his signing day presser. Wondered about the future of the great David Wetzel. That guy is just quality as a coach and as a man. Are there any rumblings of getting him into the on-field coaching cater? Shout out to Aiden Waco. Not that I'm aware of. I think he's just in that off-the-field position where a lot of it has to do with high school football relations. You know, it's going to the coaches' conventions and shaking hands and kissing babies and that kind of a deal and maintaining relationships with coaching staffs across the state. So I think he fills that role nicely. He obviously had a role similar to that when he was still at San Antonio Reagan as far as the Texas Coaches Association goes. So no rumbling that I've heard. And I would think, you know, now being in year three, that if that was a real strong possibility, then it may have happened, like, with this recent shakeup, that you maybe would have seen him out there in some capacity. So, no, I think he's a guy who can really thrive in the sort of off-the-field role and doing the behind-the-scenes stuff more so than maybe doing the on-the-field stuff.
Yeah, and he's literally in the most perfect role. Yeah. I mean, for him, this is a guy who went to Baylor.
He's like an ambassador.
And he loves Baylor, and now he gets to go do also what he loves, which is talking to high school coaches and building relationships. Another guy like we've talked about on this staff, just what a quality guy. Mm-hmm. And so he's going to go do great things with his role. Maybe one day he does, you know, decide he wants to be on the field for Baylor, and maybe it happens. But right now, he is in the perfect role for him. And he's done a great job building relationships. I saw one coach mention how if he were a high school recruit, he would go to Baylor.
That was Rodney Webb.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a big deal.
Yeah, that's a big deal. And so those kind of things, that's what he's able to do and able to bring to this team. So, yeah, nothing right now as far as getting on the field, but he's in a great role. So thanks for the question, Barely Interested. Mama Bear times three. Wow, that's three-time Mama Bear. That's pretty.
Yeah,
it's pretty good. Does Joey McGuire getting promoted to assistant head coach make him the heir apparent if and when Rule leaves?
No, I mean, I think it's a sign that he's going to be groomed to be a head coach, but not necessarily a head coach at Baylor. I think this is the next logical step. Joey said this week on 1660, the podcast I mentioned earlier, that his goal is absolutely to be a head football coach in college. So that's something that he wants to do. Could I see it working out if Rule stays for a few more years and then maybe finally decides to go to the NFL or something like that? By the time Joey's ready for it, then yeah, I could see that being a pretty easy transition. But I mean, there's so many question marks as far as like when that time would be. I mean, what if Matt Rule's here for 20 years? I mean, you can't really rule anything out as far as, you know, people want to go ahead and say, well, he's not going to be there in 2 years. You don't know that because there was people saying a year ago he wasn't going to be here this year. So too much is up in the air, but I will say he is being groomed to be a head coach, and he's going to learn the ins and outs from that role as Matt Rule's number one guy. Whether or not that's a succession plan, that would be really unfair to Matt Rule to have any type of succession plan in place. But could Matt Rule potentially see Joey as a guy like, hey, you know what, if I do leave one day, I'm going to make sure that you're ready to take over this job? Yeah, absolutely. But would it just be an automatic If it happened next year in 3 years, no, because I think that you know, that does work out for some teams, but I think to not look on the outside at all is a pretty grave mistake that ADs can make.
Yeah, I think that's a great point that you brought up, that this is him being groomed to be a head coach, is what this step does, and it just proves that he is going to be a head coach one day. I don't know if it's going to be at Baylor. We have no idea on that yet. We don't know that Rule is going to leave. He mentioned this week that if he's not going to take the New York Jets job back in his hometown, you know, what's to say he would take any job in the future?
Right.
And so we don't know how long he's going to be here, but it's a great step for Joey, and I just think it more so shows how close he is to being ready for that. And so a great step for him. Thanks for the question, Mama Bear times three. SA Baylor fan, I have seen some discussion recently about Taylor Young possibly returning to Baylor as a GA. Do you see this as something that could actually occur?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing really that I'm aware of preventing it. And if Taylor decides he wants to go into coaching, which it appears that, you know, he's looked heavily in that direction. And obviously, even though it was in a short amount of time, developed a very strong relationship with Matt Rhule, I could definitely see Taylor doing that. Now, I don't know as far as, like, what you're allowed and how it all, you know, all of that. I'd have to dig further into the whole GA process. But if, you know, if it's doable, then absolutely I could see something like that happening. But, I mean, realize as well that as a GA, it's not like he would be having a major impact on, like, the defense or anything like that. I mean, that's the ground floor that you start on in your journey as a coach, and I think he could be a great coach one day. But that would be awesome if he could start off that trip at Baylor.
Yeah, I think he'd be a good addition because he's someone that has actually played in that system, and I mean, people will definitely believe him. I mean, Taylor Young was a complete warrior the year that he was here under Rhule, and he was a warrior his whole career, but just that one year to see him play through all the injuries that he had to deal with was something really special, and kind of like what we saw from Clay Johnston last year. So, yeah, I would love to see Taylor come back and coach GAs. I think he could bring a good knowledge to that GA group, and I think he would help on the defensive side as well. He'd be able to be someone that I think the guys would really listen to and relate to as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen, you know, GAs that have started to make big impacts. So I want to clarify and say, well, it's not going to be like right away he's not making the defense better, but in time, yeah, he could certainly provide little elements here and there. And somebody who's been a very valuable asset to this coaching staff is Josh Cochran, as a GA on the offensive line, former UTO lineman who saw him tweet the other night. I guess he was out with, I'm not sure, speaking out of turn here, if it was his girlfriend or his wife or just a friend or whatever, but saw them both react to the PMP news and were like thrilled over the moon. And I hear his name, Matt Rhule brings his name up a lot as far as a coach having a bright future, so maybe that's a path that Taylor will go down as well. R. Irvin, this may be obvious, but want to make sure I'm not missing something with these promotions, more specifically the promotion of Marcus Satterfield. Does this mean we will not be hiring somebody to replace Fran Brown? It appears like those moves have been made internally, and that is correct. The movement in the coaching staff has all been in that office over there, and there won't be anybody coming up from the outside unless something were to change. That's all going to be kept in-house, and you know, that's, I'm sure, part of the reason why. I mean, I even had 2 days before Matt Rhule made known their plans, you know, somebody asked me, like, I don't understand why it's taking so long. And yeah, I was kind of like wondering, okay, what are they going to do? Because, I mean, they do need to have a safeties coach, but yeah, it's all in-house. So you understood correctly. Really, it's just moving guys around, and that's about it.
Yeah, Satterfield is, I guess, the big hire. I mean, but he's within.
But like he's from said, within, yeah,
he's an internal hire, but he's the one that's making the move.
Yeah.
On
the
10th
assistant.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So, yeah, all internally. And, you know, I wonder how long they've known that this is what they were going to do. I feel like it's something they would have known kind of immediately.
I would think so, especially because it's not like not that you really ever hear too much about coaching interviews. You know what I mean? Like, you only really hear about it when it's close to being a done deal. It's not like the NFL head coaching carousel where you hear every detail and every job interview and offer. It's much different than that. You pretty much just typically hear perhaps at a bigger school about a coach interviewing, but then you hear about a hire immediately afterwards. So, yeah, it's kind of low key, and I would think they probably had a pretty good idea on that as well. I think Matt Rhule had a good idea when Satterfield was brought on to begin with, that that was probably going to eventually be something he would wind up doing as being a 10th assistant.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's a guy that's very well qualified for it. So thanks for the question, R. Irvin. Nate Smith, hey guys, I saw a few mock drafts coming out as we approach the NFL draft. Any word on when Pro Day will be? The most recent mock draft had Hurd as the only bear going in the fifth round. I don't think he lasts through the fourth round, honestly. Also, I'll be shocked if DT doesn't get picked in mid to late rounds as well. I do not know on a Pro Day yet. I don't think they've announced that.
No.
Just quite.
But the last few Pro Days, if any indication, will be most likely. Okay, if we're going off history recently, not saying this is a done deal, but it would likely be third or so week of March to like the first week of April, somewhere in that window. So anywhere from like the 20th of March to like April 7th, I would say, somewhere in that window would be most likely if I had to take a guess.
Yeah, and so that'll be a really interesting one. As we know, the junior day last year was very not great. So hopefully this one takes another step
up. What
happened
last year?
At the Pro Day? Nothing happened.
You said junior day. Sorry,
junior day. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, Pro Day was very forgettable.
Not junior day, Pro Day, yeah.
This one should have some more. It's not going to be where it needs to be ultimately. I think that's what's going to happen as, you know, again, the Ebners, the Lovitz, and those guys start to roll around to being seniors and having opportunities. But there is definitely more actual NFL talent that will be out there. There's at least a couple of guys that you feel like, okay, yeah, they're going to get drafted or they are going to sign. I think Derek Thomas should get drafted just based on my own personal bias. Maybe if he tests really well, then some others will take note. But it seems as though NFL teams haven't had a problem drafting Temple guys. And with his size, it's exactly what the NFL is doing nowadays with defensive backs, is having guys 6 foot, 6'1", 6'2". He's a good coverage man. So I think he's got the opportunity, like probably fourth and lower. Jalen Hurts, same thing. That'll be a big day for the Ira Lewis's and those types of players as well. Jalen McClendon, of course. Should be better than last year, but still not where it'll probably ultimately end up in a couple years.
Yeah, I'm very excited to see Jalen Hurd and Derek Thomas compete at the Combine, because I think there are two guys that, if they perform well, could move up in a lot of draft boards. I think DT especially, if he can get a 40 time that's in that 4-5 range, oh man, I mean, yeah, he's absolutely getting drafted. Hurd is just another one. I think he just needs to show how he
where
performs
he fits.
And where he fits. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. His interviews are going to be very important, I think, in his process. And then as far as other guys that will be there Pro Day, you know, talking about Greg Roberts is a guy that, you know, maybe he gets drafted. He's got good size. He really came on this year finally. And so he'll be an interesting one. Ira Lewis, of course. And just curious to see how they all, you know, fit in and if any surprise guys get drafted.
Yep. So that'll do it. A lot of questions this week, but hopefully we got all of your answers in there. And we do appreciate everybody for sending those in each and every week. Some of you do it every single time, and we love that. Some of you are asking questions for the first time, and we love that too. Now signing day is all wrapped up, so when we start talking recruiting again, it'll be about 2020 guys, but we got spring ball right around the corner as well, and of course hoops, baseball, it never stops, except for in the summertime a little bit, but that's still a ways away from now. So we do appreciate you listening this week. This has been the Fast Friday Podcast on Sikkim365.com.